At California Psychics, we know some people can't read the career warning signs, like your boss still not knowing your name.
You, Tina, Lisa, Sheila, whatever. Get that report to me by lunch, okay?
It's Carrie, ma'am?
Just get it done, Terry.
So talk to California Psychics and receive the career guidance you need. We only connect you with the very best, so guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com today for limited time offers.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Take Command podcast. That's Logan Paulson, still in Cape Cod. I'm Craig Hoffman, still in my house. Appreciate you guys checking us out. Mailbag was great earlier in the week. We got another one coming for you on Monday. But today, it's our final NFC East ranking show as we did the offenses and defenses by position group the last couple of weeks. Today, coaching staffs. We'll start with head coaches. We'll get to offensive and defensive coordinators as well. A very interesting collection of folks, some new names this year, Logan. And I think it's imperative, even, I would say. It's that important.
Look at that. But
it's a good, much less fancy word. To start with kind of definitionally, like what these positions do, which I know sounds very stupid, right? Like, what's a head coach do? Well, it kind of depends. What's an offensive coordinator do? Kind of depends. And so we'll do this for each section. But like when you think of a good head coach and some of the guys that you played for, like what are some of the things that they all did? And then maybe what are some of the things that, depending on whether they were, you know, an offensive play calling type head coach, a CEO type head coach that you always look for or appreciated or maybe even wished you had at various stops in your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think I go back to my first coach, and it was Mike Shanahan, and I thought he always did a great job of kind of being that kind of figurehead head coach, you know, the kind of the archetype that oversaw everything. He kind of empowered his coordinators to make decisions, but he was kind of running quality control on stuff. So, like, I have a vivid memory my rookie year of we were watching film, and Mike used to be in his office, but he had cameras set up in the meeting rooms, which I think people have talked about since this has happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kyle would do an install of a play, and then Mike would kind of come in and open the door, and he's like, "Hey, Kyle, just make sure you talk about that versus cover two in the red zone." And Kyle's like, "Oh, okay, great point." And he would hit that, you know, and then he would do the same thing for the defensive staff too. He's like, "Hey," he really liked all out blitzes. He liked rain as a kind of like gotta have it call, which was, you know, kind of like your engage eight in Madden.
Right.
And he would really talk about that with Haslett. And I don't know how Haslett felt about it exactly, but he had his certain kind of inputs. But on the whole, it was the defensive coordinator's job to kind of carry that vision of him, you know, to the team and to the players. And so I think like that's something about the head coaching position I think people don't understand is you're not coaching that much. So like your actual input on the team is like probably less than you would think. Like I remember thinking as a player, like my interaction with the head coach was basically zero. You know, like obviously like Mike and, you know, all these different guys were awesome to me, but like my interaction was with my position coach and the OC. And like they were the ones that kind of reflected the identity of the team to me and definitely reflected the identity of the offense. And so I think with the head coach, it's like big picture stuff. And obviously, like you get guys like Kyle, when I played with him in San Francisco, who was calling plays, you know, so his interaction with the offense was significantly greater than it was with the defense. Right. And so he was the one that kind of not only had the great offensive vision, but kind of created the mindset for the offense, but had to kind of balance this tightrope of saying like, I'm managing the team, but my focus is the offense. So he had to have a guy in Robert Saleh who did a great job of kind of manning the defense and kind of engaging in Kyle's vision. Cause I think you've seen since then, like Kyle has had friction with defensive coordinators who don't exactly embrace exactly because that guy needs to be on an island a little bit more so than with that administrative head coach. So I think that's kind of what you're seeing. And I think, you know, people tend to value, in my opinion, the guy, the play calling head coach. But I do think there are some limitations to that position. And obviously guys have done really well, like Kyle, Sean, you know, Matt LaFleur to a certain extent, Mike McDaniels, like they've all done a good job of managing that. But I do think like the way I think of a head coach is kind of that, you know, the figurehead, the archetype, the guy that kind of sets the direction and is more of an administrator, quite honestly. And so that's why in some of these ranking, it's hard to identify like what the actual value is of that position in a specific organization, I think.
Yeah, I think it depends. You know, the personality and the responsibilities can shift. And so when I think of what makes a good head coach, the first thing is exactly what you said. It's like, how do you set the tone in the room? How do you set the tone for your organization? You hope that's something that you're doing in conjunction with your general manager, which is why it's been so successful through a year here where DQ and AP are on the same page. But I actually think, you know, you touched on this without saying it. The second most important thing a head coach can do is be good at hiring other people.
Right.
Because if you hire a good OC, a good DC, if you have good position coaches, and they can work well with you, they schematically are doing what you want. They understand the larger vision, how they play off of each other. You know, you don't want an offensive coordinator who doesn't really care what happens to the defense. It's like, no. I need you to run the ball a little bit to give our guys a breather. Like, you need to have that ability to have cohesion side to side. And it obviously is emphasized more on the CEO types. Like, the less involved you are schematically, the more important it is to make sure that you're not going to need to have oversight over those people when it comes to the schematics of stuff and the details of stuff, if that's not your specialty, especially like if you're a defensive head coach, you're offensive, whatever. And so I think, like, in a lot of ways, the hard work is done in the off season for a head coach, because you have to get those hires right. You have to set the tone of your season in the spring and in the workouts, and everybody needs to enter training camp on the same page. And then it becomes about maintaining those things and doing the right quality control in season to say, hey, we're getting a little wayward here on this goal that we had, or like, hey, this detail needs to be buttoned up. And that's where I think a guy like DQ is so great. Yeah. Obviously, we'll talk about Dan a little bit more probably in detail than some of these other guys, because we get to actually see him work, and you played for him in Atlanta. But like, the emphasis on situational football, like those types of things, to be like, this is how our practice is going to be structured because we care about these things. Like, to me, that's what a head coach is someone who has a vision. That vision is good. Hires the right people to implement it, and then does a good job of sticking with that throughout the entirety of their tenure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's just interesting to see kind of the different personalities maybe like impact that head coaching role, you know, like, cause they do, I always think of them not having a huge impact, but because if they're doing a good job, they're setting the tone for the whole thing, right? They're setting the tone. So like, you know, Mike Shanahan team felt like a Mike Shanahan team, right? And then obviously, like, when Jay Gruden came in, and it felt very different, like the standards were very different. And, you know, people have talked about how Jay has been, you know, like some of the inconsistencies of Jay's tenure. Like, I think Jay's a really smart dude, and I think he's a really, you know, he's a fun guy to be around, obviously. But like, I think there were some limitations in terms of how he saw the direction of the organization.
Things weren't always as buttoned up, and that's the personality of Jay Gruden.
Right. And so I think, like, if you're going to be that way, and you mentioned this with the hiring thing, and we've talked about this before with Jay, I think you need to know like where your blind spots are a little bit. You know, like, I think about like with Dan in Atlanta, and Dan, I think, is a really smart guy. I think he's a really smart football coach, but that's not his superpower, in my opinion. Like, his superpower is to give, to build the connectivity of the team, to give you a very strong direction. And then kind of like what you're talking about, like, put the practice structure, you know, kind of in place, like the meeting room structure, like all that. So that's like where he's at his best, because he can build relationships with players and make them feel important and maximize them from like a, I like think about as a player for me, like, you're valuable to this organization. And I felt that from the head coach and Dan Quinn, because I just talked about how I never really talked to the head coach. And all of a sudden I got to Atlanta and Dan's like, this is what you're good at. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to, you know, like, this is your role. And that was pretty fantastic, you know. But, and I think he struggled in, what was that, 2017, because the defense was struggling. He felt like he had to take more of that responsibility on, and he kind of was of two minds heading into that, you know what I'm saying? So it's interesting to kind of, I don't know, like, the head coach, I think, is so important to kind of to provide the direction, that when you're of two minds, you can't do it to the best of your ability, you really see a decrease in efficiency for the entire team.
Yeah, I think, you know, that also goes to like the skill set of a coach, right? Like, how good of a problem solver are you?
Sure.
And I think there are some coaches that, like, when plan A works, they're incredible because they're so great at messaging and whatever. And, you know, that they can break through with players. They have those relationships. Like you said, I mean, Dan probably has better relationships with his players than any head coach in the league. Maybe there's some others that I'm not thinking about, but like, certainly there's nobody better at it to like make you feel seen as a player,
for, you know,
yeah, like, to make you feel seen as a player than Dan Quinn. Like how many other teams are like, oh yeah, no, I, the third string safety, have a great relationship with my head coach. Like that's a rare thing, but how are you as a problem solver? And some coaches are better at that and they're able to fix problems quickly, but maybe they don't have the personnel or the personality skills. And so it's a mixed bucket, as opposed to, I think when we get to the OCs and DCs, it'll be a little bit more structured. So with that said, New York's got Brian Daboll, Philly's got Nick Sirianni, Washington's got Dan Quinn, Dallas has Brian Schottenheimer in his first year. How do you rank these four and why?
Yeah, I had a really hard time with the top two, in my opinion. And so I kind of said like Nick Sirianni is number one. And I think you brought up something about him that I thought was really interesting is like last year, you look at which was one of his best years as the Philadelphia head coach. Obviously, like he's had, you know, it's like good year, brain drain, bad year, good year. I thought, you know, 2 years ago, he struggled in terms of hiring competent offensive and defensive coordinators, right? I think that was one of the reasons that they struggled a little bit, right? And they kind of had that skid near the end of the year where they were playing
total collapse down the stretch. Yeah. There's no way around it.
Pretty bad football. So he's responsible for that. I think the coaching hires are like, he's responsible for that as well. And then, you know, they're kind of talking about whether we should fire him or not. And he goes out and makes just two knockout hires, you know, Moore and then obviously Vic Fangio, like who I think did a great job last year. I mean, Vic Fangio, I can't overstate how impressive what he did was last year with them, in terms of like bringing on young talent, you know, kind of, just getting them locked into his defense in a way that like I didn't think was possible in a year. So like obviously two fantastic hires. You kind of establish this this identity offensively where it's like we are going to be hyper aggressive in terms of going forward on fourth down. You've cultivated the tush push. I don't know how like where he fits in terms of credit or blame for developing that play, but the idea of being hyper aggressive on fourth down, I think, is the direction the league is going, the direction good offense is going. It insulates your defense, all those things. And again, like this is going to be an interesting year for him because they've had a brain drain, right? Like the offensive coordinator leaves. And so does he have to take more play calling responsibilities? Like talking to people that were there in 2023, like he had to take on more play calling responsibilities. It really negatively impacted his ability to kind of guide the ship. And so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because they just won a Super Bowl and they looked really good. But I do think losing the offensive coordinator will be really interesting to see whether he can handle that. He hired kind of one of his, a guy that he knows really well, kind of one of his buddies seemingly on paper, who's never had this kind of responsibility before. So like, do you oversee that side of the football more? Do you neglect the defense because Vic Fangio is there? Maybe you can do that because Vic Fangio is there. But I just think like you can't undervalue like winning football games. Managing all the personalities there too is something that I think is important. You know, your AJ Browns, your Jalen Carters, like all those different guys. So I'm going to say he's number one, but to me it's like in lockstep. Like if you said like flip a coin 50-50, you could, depending on time of day, it's between him and Dan Quinn. And we'll talk about Dan more extensively, but what do you think about Nick Sirianni being number one?
I think you have, you like, eventually you just can't argue with the fact that he's won a bunch. Like clearly he's good at it. He's got, I think he's got like one of the best winning percentages in NFL history as a head coach. So what am I going to say that? Well, here's what I'll say. Howie Roseman has a big, big impact on what
I was just about to say, man. And like that's the other thing
is like, if I'm going to make the argument for Dan, not that Adam Peters isn't amazing, but like they work, I think much more in conjunction together versus Howie is clearly in charge. Like I think Dan and Adam look at each other as like, we're 1A, 1B, and we don't care who's who, but we're together. It doesn't matter. We're one together. Like Howie is one in Philadelphia. It is a very front office driven organization, both in that the most important factor in the team's success is the roster and he helped build it, but he has also been involved in some of the coach hiring and some of the other things. So if you were telling me we are starting a 33rd team in the NFL, and these are my two options for head coach, I get to steal either Nick Sirianni or Dan Quinn, I would take Dan Quinn.
I probably would too.
But I also wouldn't be upset if I had to take Nick Sirianni. And so that is not meant to disrespect Sirianni. Like, yes, he is operating within that structure in Philadelphia where Howie is the man. But he has done a very good job of that. And he's clearly can work with the general manager because they've, again, won a ton. His ability to manage personalities. I also kind of think, like, a coach fitting in the in developing the personality of a team that also fits the city and the fan base, I think is a really cool thing when it happens. And like Nick Sirianni seems like kind of a prick, and that's perfect for Philadelphia. seems like a prick, positive. Like, yeah. I'm sure he can be a great guy. And you know, you hear like Jason Kelce talk about him on his podcast. Like, he loves Nick Sirianni. A lot of those guys like really, really like him. But his prickliness, like his willingness to be a little feisty, it kind of works. And in a way, it's necessary in Philadelphia because the fans will turn on you. The media will turn on you quickly. Like, it's a harsh, harsh, harsh market. Mm. And he's built for that. And so I have a lot of respect for Sirianni, even though I still don't fully understand what he does. But like, it's this nebulous, like, take care of the administrative stuff, set the tone for the rooms, quash this media thing. Like, he has been a relatively good spokesperson for them, and sometimes that involves like, I'm going to cause a controversy to take the heat and put it on me versus my players having to deal with it. He's clearly got good connections with a lot of guys, and then like you said, the game management stuff is, I think, a very, very, very positive thing for him. So again, if we're talking within their situation and you want to say Lombardi as a tiebreaker, I'm perfectly fine with Nick Sirianni being one. If we're starting a new team and I get to pick between Sirianni and Quinn, I'm probably taking DQ.
Yeah, I think, that's a good point. I think that's the other thing. It's the same kind of knock that you have against Hurts, you know, quite frankly, is the roster is so damn good. It's like you're really just managing personalities and kind of getting out of the way. I would assume, I do feel like he's involved, like just from an outside perspective looking in, he's involved himself in a way that I don't know is entirely necessary at moments, but I think you bring up a good point. Like, maybe that's his way of kind of deflecting some of the issues, or like, you know, solving a problem. But I don't know, man. I love Dan Quinn. I'm super impressed with him. It just feels weird to not give a guy who just won a Super Bowl,
like, by the way, flowers. Went to it 2 years ago.
That's what,
like,
I'm saying.
He's been, like, to two of the last three Super Bowls.
And the roster's sick. You know what I mean? The roster's amazing. And I look at what Dan Quinn did last year in terms of elevation, and I'm not sure Nick Sirianni has that club in the bag, but like, you got to win the games. You know what I mean? You got to get to where you got to go. And he's been up and down for sure. Like, you know, he's yelling at fans. He's doing all sorts of crazy stuff. But
even in 23, man, like, they were really good until they weren't. Like, they fell off a cliff, and they were like climbing. They had good speed. They were the best. I think they were the best team in the NFC again. And then they just boom, like straight down drop. So even that year was like not bad until it was awful.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's just a weird situation, because I think the couple seasons they've had kind of seem to reflect his personality, right? Like, when it's good, it's great, and when it's bad, right? And so like, where do you value that? Obviously, his relationship with Howie is a big thing here. Howie's involvement is a big thing too. So he's a tough one for me. But I don't know, man. Like, he just wins ball games, and like you mentioned this idea of like, what is our offensive identity and what is our defensive identity? And as a head coach, how do we blend them? And last year, I felt like they were one of the more complete teams in the NFL. You know what I mean? Yeah. Their ability to run the football, play complementary defense. I mean, depending on how you want to characterize that, like, play really good defense and play complementary offense. Like, you know, running the football, kind of understanding who you are from an offensive line standpoint, who's the best player on your team or most impactful player in Saquon Barkley. Like, I don't know, man. He's an interesting one, but I do think, like, you win games, you keep the train on the tracks, and there is some value and merit to that.
As for 3 and 4, and then we'll come back and we'll pick an order here. Dable obviously is a controversial figure in New York at this point.
He's a controversial figure in this drill. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just like, I think he's probably on the hot seat. Like, he's in kind of a tough spot. Like, yeah, man, he's interesting, because I like Brian Daboll. I like what he did up in Buffalo with Josh Allen. I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. I think in his second year when, like, they got that offense overachieving and they did like some tricky stuff, kind of really understood who they were offensively, the keepers, the boots, like getting Daniel Jones on the move. Like, I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. But, you know, like, that's the other thing that's tough about this is, like, he doesn't have a quarterback. You know, like, there's no quarterback there that's like helming the ship in a way that's going to elevate kind of a bad roster. So, like, some of the problems that Nick Sirianni never has to experience, like Brian Daboll experiences them every single week, every single practice, right? Like they're a little bit understaffed on the offensive line. They're starting to get more talented at the skill position spots. They don't have a quarterback. I think the defense is going to be much better this year, like we talked about on the defensive show. But prior to this, like, remember how bad the Giants team was before he got there? Remember how bad
Giants have been a bad organization for like 10 years.
Yeah. And so like he's carrying the mantle for that at the moment. But I kind of feel like this is the first time since I've been covering the team where they're kind of like going to be a competitive roster, you know? And like we in here in Washington say, oh, well, the Commanders did in 1 year, but like we found a quarterback, right? And we overachieved at certain spots offensively and defensively. So I don't know. I think he does some cool stuff. I think he's creative. I think he's kind of this play caller head coach model. I think he's like, he's a little bit abrasive, you know what I mean? Seemingly in the media, which is, I don't always love that, but it, again, like he prior to his stint in New York, when he was in Buffalo or with the Giants, I think he did some really good stuff. So obviously he's talented and he's smart. I think he can motivate a room. But I think the roster there really hurts him, quite honestly.
Yeah. And then Schottenheimer, we have no idea in Dallas.
I have no idea, bro.
He's been an OC, not even a play calling OC. He's been an OC in a bunch of different places. He's had decent success, you know, a couple really, really good seasons with some really, really good quarterbacks. But also, again, he hasn't been the play caller. So he's been behind someone who would probably get more credit for being the driver of that success in various places. And there's been even times where they've been fairly successful, like some of the Russell Wilson seasons. It's like, man, would they have been better if they had let Russ cook? Like he was there, I think, for the let Russ cook era. And people were kind of frustrated, even though they had some success. So I think we put Schottenheimer fourth in the, sorry, man, we haven't seen you do it yet. Daboll third, unless you just like hate him, which you don't. If you're like, man, that guy sucks and I don't understand why he has a job, like I could put him fourth. But I agree with you. I think there's some good to Brian Daboll. Like he's kind of in the Jay Gruden tree to me. So I don't know what that means to Brian Daboll long term. Probably not great, but we'll see. And then do you want Sirianni or Quinn?
I mean, I put this in the notes when we were getting ready for the show. Like I think Dan Quinn's ability to manage personalities, engage with everybody, have a clear vision. And I think the way he's handled the media has just been impeccable. Like he is always on message. He never kind of steps out of line. You ask him a tough question and he's going to cut you off at the pass. Like, and like, if you look at the last year, there wasn't like really any controversy this offseason. People have tried to get him. Like I think about that question that Scott tried to ask him where it's like, are you the prey now? He's like, no, dude, we're always the predator. And he cut it off. And I thought like, that's exactly what like, your head coach should be excellent at that. And he is excellent at that kind of stuff. And so put that on. So how he handles the media, put that on top of how he handles the team. You know, like I just look at the team and I think about my time with him. And I just like how happy and joyful I was to come to work every day. And I was in a spot in my career where I did not feel very good physically, but it was awesome to like pop up in the morning and be like, man, I get to go play for Dan Quinn. And I think he's done that here too. So I have nothing but the highest respect for him. And I think he's a fantastic head coach. And if I ever become a head coach, I want to adopt a lot of what he does. So yeah, man, he could easily be one for me. Like
I think I want to put Quinn one. I'm sorry to the Eagles fans. I want to put Quinn one because I think
he's really good. If you're an Eagles fan, you're listening to this. Like if you're an Eagles fan, you're looking at this, like he's really good at his job. Like, what I mean?
I would be happy to put T1 like tied for first, both those guys, and then put Daboll at three and Schottenheimer at four. But then we're probably getting yelled at for, you know, hey, pick one, don't be a cop out. So we're gonna put Dan Quinn atop.
But like to your point, like the hiring thing, I didn't even talk about it, but it's he did a great job. Like he did a great job.
And Sirianni, because he's had the up and down hiring. Like, I know it's almost unfair because Quinn hasn't had to replace anybody yet. And the last time he did in Atlanta, like, that was kind of the downfall, right? Like, he didn't do a good job replacing Kyle. And there's eventually struggles on the defensive side. So, like, what happens if Cliff leaves? What happens if Joe leaves? But I think that they have built such a deep staff here. And this is, and again, not really fair to Sirianni, but, like, Quinn did the whole 360 review thing. Like, I don't think that's going to happen to him again. I think he got a lot better as a head coach and he's going to make sure. And in fact, they've got people in the pipeline. Like he's ready to go with the next guy. And so, I think I want to put Quinn one, Sirianni two, Daboll, and then Schottenheimer. You good with that?
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. I mean, I just like, I don't know how you put him after not winning the Super Bowl, but like I like Dan Quinn a lot.
So it did make the NFC Championship game in year one with a rookie QB. That's pretty good.
That's a great point. And I think that's another great point. Like, and I put that in the notes too, is like just his ability to elevate last year. Like you saw how impactful that was. And again, like Jaden Daniels, Cliff Kingsbury, who deserves credit for that? It's probably an amalgamation or some type of weird vortex of all three of those guys. But yeah, dude, I think I have no problem with Dan. And I think he's a great head coach. I think he's one of the best in the league. And obviously, like, you know, when they hired him, I was ecstatic. So,
yeah.
Sorry, Nick. Sorry, Philly. Like, let us know how pissed you are. But, like, Dan Quinn's the man. So,
he's up. You hate us anyway. It's fine. We'll get over it.